President Bush spoke with the chairman of the Red Lake Band of Chippewa Indians today, expressing his condolences on this week's shootings on the Red Lake Reservation. A spokesman for the White House said the two men spoke for 5 minutes and that Mr. Bush promised federal assistance. Tomorrow, the first funerals will be held for victims of the attack. Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty has declared Monday a statewide day of remembrance.
The Red Lake Reservation is home to some 5,000 Chippewa or Ojibwe people. Our colleague Melissa Block has been spending time there this week, listening to people talk about the shootings and about where the community goes from here.
The Red Lake Reservation is still snowy in early spring. Stands of pine and birch stretch for miles, reaching to the frozen twin ovals of lower and upper Red Lake. They say in the fall, the sands around Red Lake turn a purplish red. The legend goes that's the trace of an old battle when the Ojibwe pushed the Lakota people into the lake and turned it red with blood. In the town of Red Lake, outside the community center, a spiritual fire crackles and spits, filling the air with sweet smoke. The fire will be tended through the night for days. A tobacco pouch sits open on a rock. Tribe members may come and toss tobacco on the fire to carry prayers to the spirit world. Down the road, wakes are now underway for several of the victims at the local Humanities Center that's also a casino bingo hall. Red Lake is a closed reservation, one of just two in the country. The tribal government has full sovereignty with its own courts, laws, police department, and license plates. In the town of Redby, you can get groceries, a cup of coffee, or a bowl of hangover soup at a small market called simply The Other Store.
This store may help you?
There's a collection jar for the victims' families. A sign on the door says, "Please open your hearts and your pockets." 17-year-old Clara Johnson stopped by The Other Store yesterday and sat down to talk. The school shootings hit very close to home.
All I can think about is the loss of my cousin. That's basically the only thing that's been on my mind since Monday.
Clara's 14-year-old cousin, Alicia White, was one of Jeff Weiss's victims on Monday. She was a ninth grader, a cheerleader, who talked of wanting to be a police officer. Clara Johnson knew Jeff Weiss from school, knew he was teased as an outsider, knew he drew disturbing pictures.
In ninth grade, I seen some drawings. I was bored in class and turned around and he was drawing, and I don't know, I asked him to look at some of them and they had like little paragraphs to go with their stories. And
what kind of stuff was it?
Monsters ripping people apart, and I don't know, just stuff like that, like people getting killed. And but I don't know, I guess he drew how he felt, and that's how he felt.
As Clara's one-year-old daughter toddles around the store, the young mother thinks about a future away from the reservation.
Everybody around here is so in shock. They can't believe that this is happening to us, and I don't even care for it around here. I mean, when I'm going to be 18 soon, and I'm planning on getting out of here, taking my daughter and leaving. I mean, I was supposed to go back to school next year. I was supposed to finish as a senior. And I don't know, I don't feel safe. And I don't want my daughter going to school around here, because what if somebody tries to reenact the thing that just happened? I mean, I don't want my daughter in any danger or anything.
Did you feel like this before Monday? Did you feel like you wanted to leave before this week?
Well, it's always been on my mind that I want to get out of here. I mean, this, I'm proud I'm from here, but then in some way, I don't want to be from here. Because there's so much drugs and violence and everything. It's just unbelievable, and I don't know.
Clara's cousin, Alicia White, will be buried on Monday in Redby. That same day, Father Bill Merkins will officiate at the funeral for Derek Brunn, the security guard killed at the school. Father Bill is 82 and recently retired. He was a priest on the reservation at St. Mary's Catholic Church for 12 years. Every year, he says, he'd conduct 40 or 50 funerals. He's all too familiar with the myriad ways lives are cut short at Red Lake.
I had heard that the life expectancy on the reservation was 47. And I'm going to study of my own up there, of all the people over 10 years that I buried. Now, that's only a 10-year period. And it's only on the southern shore of the lake. But there it was 51. But that's still a quarter of a century less than the larger population on the average. And it's because of accidents, because of killings. There's been some others, but most of it is from sickness. Everything from alcoholism and all the effects of alcoholism to the devastating diabetes, and there's a lot of respiratory problems, heart problems.
Do you worry about what happens to that community after something like this?
I worry about that community all the time. I don't worry more now. When the chips are down, they're pretty strong people, and they gather themselves together.
Members of the Red Lake Nation who've scattered have been returning to the reservation this week to help mourn. And in the city of Bemidji, some 30 miles south, there have been a number of prayer services and pipe ceremonies. This afternoon, hundreds gathered at Bemidji State University's American Indian Resource Center. 10 young men from Red Lake Nation gathered in a circle for a warrior song. Long carved wooden pipes were lit as part of a ritual to bring strength. The man leading the pipe ceremony reminded those gathered to pray not just for the victims, but also for the shooter and his family. They too need healing, he said. Lee Cook is director of the American Indian Resource Center at Bemidji State. He grew up in Red Lake. Cook's first cousin was Daryl Lusher, the grandfather of the shooter, Jeff Weiss, and among the first of his victims. Even as Lee Cook grieves his family's loss, he looks to the future.
We've been surviving a long time. We're probably the best survivors in the world. The traumas and difficulty are a large part of our experience, and surviving them is also a large part of our experience. But we tend to come together as families in this community fairly well in times of difficulty. So I think we'll do well. I think it's also sometimes that sometimes tragedy our blessing in disguise, you know, because we've needed to do something about our young people for a long time. We don't have the kind of infrastructure and support system to adequately provide, you know, programs and activities and support services to young people. And it's I think that it's a wake-up call, I think, to lots of people, and particularly to our tribal leadership.
And tribal elders like Frank Dickinson and Wanda Baxter see an immediate need. They teach Ojibwe culture and language in the Red Lake Middle School. This week, they've been conducting healing ceremonies for some of those who lived through the attacks and who can't stop reliving those terrifying minutes.
They're seeing like images, and they can't sleep, and they're so emotional. They don't know how to feel. We got to make them feel whole again. When they come to us and do that tonight, they're going to cry, they're going to really hurt, you know. And so that has to come out so they can deal with that, you know. And we're there to help along the way. The grandmother's spirits will come there, and they'll hug them, and they'll hold them, and they'll do all kinds of things. And so after that happens, then they'll release all that hurt, that pain.
That healing, it's a holistic healing, and you heal the mind, the body, and the spirit as one.
People talk a lot about this generation, the younger generation, losing sight of the old ways, the old traditions that are obviously so important to you, and that they're lost in a sense. And I wonder if you worry about that.
You know, we talked about that the other night and last night and today a little bit, part of it. Is that how did our people get to that level, you know? And when we're in the schools and we talk to the kids about certain parts and aspects of our belief, and we'll tell them, say, now you go home and you talk to your grandpa, you talk to your uncle, or you talk to your dad or your mom, whatever. And they say, well, they don't know anything. And then once we start looking at it, we find out that that their parents and grandparents are victims of residential schools, where they took the language away from them, they took the culture and traditions away. That was the United States government did all that. So now all of a sudden, the grandpas don't have that kind of knowledge that to give to the grandkids. They don't have that. You know, a lot of our kids don't have this slightest idea who they are. That's why they walk around with long pants and cap bills turned the other way and walk around like black people, that they walk around and they use that black lingo and all that. That's the kids that are lost. And, you know, how are we going to get these kids back on an even keel? That's not an easy task to even answer.
And our young women today, and our young men, they have to go back to these old ways. Well, we call them old ways. I think maybe kids maybe get turned off when we say old ways, you know, because everything's coming up so new. But that's our foundation, those old ways.
Red Lake High School remains closed. The building will need extensive repairs after Monday's assault. Frank Dickinson and Wanda Baxter say the school will need more than physical rehabilitation. It will have to be purified, washed with cedar, and filled with the scent of burning sage to drive away evil spirits. Melissa Block, NPR News, Bemidji, Minnesota.